Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
From KQED.
From KQED in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, top executives from Chevron, ExxonMobil, BP America, and Shell will testify tomorrow before a House committee about the fossil fuel industry's role in promoting climate change disinformation. House Democrats plan to model the hearing on the Big Tobacco hearings of the 1990s and will examine whether Big Oil has misled Americans about the dangers of fossil fuels and prevented action on climate change. We'll preview the hearing, and we'll get the latest on efforts for accountability in California's Huntington Beach oil spill earlier this month. Join us. This is Forum. I'm Mina Kim. The CEOs of major oil companies will testify tomorrow before the House Oversight Committee about their role in spreading climate change disinformation. Committee Chair Representative Carolyn Maloney and Environment Subcommittee Chair Representative Ro Khanna have said, quote, public reporting indicates that these companies and their allies in the fossil fuel industry have worked to prevent serious action on global warming by generating doubt about the documented dangers of fossil fuels. For more, we're joined by Amy Westervelt, a climate journalist whose latest project is Rigged, an online archive and podcast about disinformation. Amy is also founder and executive editor of Drilled News, a climate accountability news source. Amy Westervelt, thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So tomorrow's hearing, it's being called landmark and potentially blockbuster. Can you put in context for us just how unusual a hearing like this is, where you have these oil executives coming before the committee to explain the way they've basically messaged their impact on climate change?
Yeah, it's pretty unusual, although, you know, we have seen it before with the tobacco companies and then actually more recently with a lot of the social media companies who are also on the hook for disinformation these days, yes. You know, but I think that the oil execs have not really had to answer this publicly for some of their actions in the past. So it should be interesting to see how they handle that.
Yeah. Talk about what this is. So we have the heads of ExxonMobil, BP, Chevron, Shell. We've got the trade groups, American Petroleum Institute, and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce coming in. Mm-hmm. Can you give us like some specific examples of climate disinformation that spurred this committee to call these hearings?
Yeah. So what's really interesting about this is they have specifically limited it to looking at what these companies have been doing since 2015. So oftentimes when we hear about climate disinformation, it's, you know, Exxon was doing research on climate change in the 70s, and there are multiple, you know, internal memos about exactly what we're going to see if fossil fuel use continues and what that means for both the world and the industry. You know, we know that BP has pushed the carbon footprint calculator to try to convince people that, you know, really it's all of our individual actions that are the problem. And Shell, you know, was producing reports in the 90s about the risk of climate change too. But this time we're looking at 2015 to now. So what Ro Khanna has said, and we'll probably hear him say this today, is that he wants to look at specifically what they have been doing since they started promising shareholders and the public that they were actually going to take climate change seriously. So when we are looking at 2015 to now, they've kind of moved away from the classic science denial tactics, and it's more about delaying action on climate. So they're doing things like saying, oh, well, it's going to be too expensive, or, you know, transition is going to negatively impact poor and marginalized people, or actually we're totally on top of things. That's a big one. They talk a mean game about how much they're investing in renewable energy and transition. But up until recently, you know, I don't think any oil company was investing more than 3% of their annual capital expenditures on anything but fossil fuel development. So he wants to look at that disconnect and how they're misleading not just the public, but shareholders recently about, you know, how they've turned over a new leaf and they're actually going to take climate seriously now.
Yeah. When you mentioned that, you're reporting in The Guardian about Darren Wood, CEO of ExxonMobil, saying that he totally supports the Paris Climate Agreement to substantially reduce global pollution. But then there are these documents that showed that his plan for the company is actually to increase its emissions by 17%. I'm guessing those are some of the examples.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, the entire oil industry, as it's saying, you know, okay, we're going to transition. We're going to be energy companies now. And we're, you know, investing in carbon capture and algae biofuels and all these things. What their reports are saying, their quarterly reports and their annual reports and what their, you know, internal documents are saying is that they're investing in plastic, that, you know, as people are using less fossil fuels for transportation and in residential sectors, that they are really leaning on this sort of third pillar of petrochemicals and are seeing plastic as their big escape hatch. So the idea that, you know, as concern about climate change increases, that they are suddenly going to be investing in solar, just is not proven out by what they're actually doing. And I suspect that will be, you know, coming to light in this hearing.
What are the most immediate things that spurred this, or recent things that at least the committee noted, was catching a former ExxonMobil lobbyist on tape? Can you just describe what happened there quickly?
Yeah, this was an incredible sting that the journalists at Unearthed, which is an investigative journalism project that's funded by Greenpeace in the UK, they had been trying to find senior level lobbyists within Exxon or who had recently left Exxon that they could talk to see if they could really suss out the strategies that the company has been using. And they found a couple of them and they posed as recruiters who were interviewing them for other lobbying positions. And so they got them talking and really, you know, bragging as one would in an interview maybe about how, you know, they'd pulled off all of these great feats for Exxon and really laying out exactly how they had obstructed climate policy and how, you know, they go to their guy Joe Manchin every week and you know, how they're trying to block any kind of regulation on emissions and you know, that they're going to embrace a carbon tax because, you know, that sounds better, but really we're never actually going to back a carbon tax. So this video, if people haven't seen it, is incredible of these two very high level lobbyists. I mean, Exxon tried to really distance itself from these guys after this stuff came out and say that, you know, they didn't represent the company and, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. But they were both very high level executives in the company for quite a while before these videos came out. So yes, I know that Ro Khanna has said that certainly prompted this investigation.
We're talking with Amy Westervelt, a climate journalist whose latest project is Rigged, an online archive and podcast about disinformation. We're also talking about the upcoming House committee hearing on climate misinformation. And I want to invite you, our listeners, to join the conversation. What are your thoughts on how the oil and gas industry talks about climate change? And do you think big oil bears responsibility for worsening or exacerbating climate change? There are a lot of things that have done that. What do you think big oil's responsibility is to all of this? 866-733-6786. 866-733-6786. Get in touch on Twitter or Facebook at KQED Forum. Email us forum@kqed.org. So as you said, Amy, at the beginning, this is being compared to the Big Tobacco hearings. Just remind us what happened in 1994 at the Big Tobacco hearings in case anyone needs a refresher.
Yeah, the CEOs from all of the major tobacco companies, you know, testified before Congress that they did not believe nicotine to be addictive. And in subsequent years, through both whistleblowers and kind of ongoing investigations, it was discovered that, in fact, not only did they know exactly how addictive nicotine was, but they were using that to make cigarettes more addictive and to sell more product. So that was a real kind of linchpin to eventually holding the tobacco industry accountable for misleading the public on smoking. And I think that there's some sense that we might see something similar in these hearings. Although I don't know, you know, I think people forget that the oil companies were actually co-defendants of the tobacco companies back then. So this is not their first rodeo. And they are very well trained, you know, like these executives are highly media trained. They have been giving depositions in lots of litigation over the last several years around this stuff as well. So I'm not sure that we'll see them make an obvious gaffe, you know?
And remind me a little bit of the fallout for Big Tobacco after they basically lied under oath. And then what was the impact nationwide?
Yeah. So they ended up being investigated by the Department of Justice, and they also ended up being sued by the Attorney General of every state in the Union and the District of Columbia, which resulted in the master settlement, which is, you know, tens of billions of dollars paid out to the states to deal with the health costs of all these smoking-related illnesses. That I think they're still paying on that, but you know, I've written about this. I think that there's a little bit of a danger to sort of overly glorify what sort of accountability was had at that point in time, because, you know, yes, I think smoking, of course, definitely fell out of favor in the U.S. and the tobacco companies were vilified and smoking decreased in the country and all these things. But in, you know, in the years from 2000 to 2020, tobacco companies' profits increased over 70%. They found massive export markets. They all got into vaping, and many of them are doing some of the same things in that industry that they, you know, were supposedly held accountable for 20 years ago, you know? So I think there's a real danger here to think that, you know, one fine or one embarrassing public moment will be the silver bullet. And in fact, I think there's a lot of systemic reform that needs to happen to prevent any industry from misleading the public.
It'll be interesting to see how the parallels play out and what parts of those parallels that you're drawing right there do. We're talking with Amy Westervelt. And actually, let me put that question out to the listeners as well, in addition to the others that I'd mentioned. What do you think of the comparison between Big Oil and Big Tobacco? 866-733-6786 is the number to call. 866-733-6786. Email us, forum@kqed.org. Get in touch on Twitter or Facebook at KQED Forum. Congressman Ro Khanna will actually join us right after the break, so stay with us for that. You're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim.
Support for Forum is sponsored by Stanford's Master of Liberal Arts program. Have you found yourself reflecting on your life and education? Perhaps you think it's too late or you're too busy to earn a master's degree. Stanford's part-time MLA program is designed for anyone, from recent college grads to retirees, who'd like to pursue an interdisciplinary course of study in the liberal arts. MLA students also enjoy access to the world-class facilities on the Stanford campus. Information session held May 16th. Learn more at mla.stanford.edu.
You're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. We're previewing tomorrow's House Committee hearing on climate disinformation with Amy Westervelt, founder and executive editor of Drilled News, a climate accountability news source. Her latest project is Rigged, an online archive and podcast about disinformation. And joining us now is U.S. Congress member for the 17th Congressional District, Ro Khanna, chairman of the House Subcommittee on the Environment and member of the House Oversight Committee. Representative Khanna, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And so we were just talking before the break about these hearings that you will be very much front and center on. And I wanted to ask you, you have said in an interview that you know these companies and trade groups that are coming before you tomorrow have lied and that you have scores of evidence that they misrepresented to the American public the threat of climate change. So what is your goal for tomorrow's hearing if you already know this?
It's to have the oil companies come clean and to commit to stopping disinformation. This is not something new. I mean, Naomi Oreskes wrote a book, Merchants of Doubt, that documents all of this, all of the misrepresentations by big oil over the years, and researchers have known this. The reality is they've never had to answer under oath in front of Congress. And so tomorrow they will have a choice. They can either come and lie, like the big tobacco big tobacco executives did, and that's taking a big risk to lie to Congress under oath, or they can come clean, admit the truth, and commit to stopping disinformation.
Both admissions or lies could have a big ripple effect. What will you do with that information after they talk to you about it, after they answer questions from you?
Well, my hope is that they won't lie. My hope is that they will be truthful. And if they are truthful, that is significant because it can they could commit to stopping funding shadow groups that are engaged in disinformation. They can commit to making sure they're auditing groups that they're funding for climate disinformation. They can commit to correcting the record of past statements that have been misleading. What are they going to do to make up for all of the misleading information? So if we can get them to commit to stopping climate disinformation, that would be an extraordinary win. Of course, there could be legislation that emerges from this as well. And one thing that when I talked to Naomi Oreskes, who I really admire, who's been one of the leading researchers on all of this, she said, well, the reality is not everyone's read my book. And very few people in this country know that these oil companies have engaged in distortion. So if we can break through to the American public, it can start to shift the opinion of these companies and put more pressure on them to actually take action in tackling the climate crisis.
So these executives have agreed to appear in person. They haven't, though, Representative Khanna, returned all the documents and communications that you requested. Do you plan to subpoena the executives for these documents?
There's just one clarification. They will be appearing, but remotely, because under COVID rules, any witness is allowed to appear remotely. And while they're flying off to everywhere else in the rest of the world, they're taking full advantage of the House rules to appear remotely for the hearing. But we have not gotten as many documents. No, it was no coincidence that we got about 100,000 documents 3 days, 2 days before the hearing, which is the games that these companies play, but we still haven't had all documents that are responsive. And I've said this is just the beginning of an investigation. They may be called back. We certainly will be asking for more documents. What often happens in these kind of hearings is afterwards you sometimes get whistleblowers. That's what happened in Big Tobacco, who send documents. So this is just the beginning of the process. And I've said from the beginning, all tools are at our disposal. And we saw it work. I mean, the big oil companies have resisted congressional committee after congressional committee. They showed up now because they know the oversight committee is not one you mess around with. We have used tools before to compel testimony. I think unless you're Donald Trump, your odds of evading the committee are not very good.
So you bring up Big Tobacco, and these hearings are being compared to that. And one of the things that resulted from the tobacco hearings in 94 was this across-the-nation response, regardless of party with relative to governors and so on. Do you feel like in these divisive times, these kinds of hearings are going to have the same effect, Or are you concerned that it will be again held up as partisan?
I'm sure the Republicans will try to paint it as partisan. And there is no doubt that in this country, we have disagreements on the policies that are needed to tackle the climate crisis and the urgency of acting. But there's one thing that the polling shows, and it surprised me, that Democrats, independents, and Republicans all agree on, and that is they don't like big corporations lying to us. They don't like being misled. And if companies have misled the public, they expect those companies to make amends. And so the part that I don't think will be partisan, at least with the viewing public, I'm not saying in the halls of the Capitol, but with the people watching, will be holding these companies accountable for misrepresentations that they have made and continue to make. And that, I do think, will break through.
Congressman Khanna, I know also that you and your committee have been focused closer to home, focused on the recent oil spill off Huntington Beach, and whether federal regulators failed to do their jobs effectively. I'm curious if you see a connection between big oil's disinformation that you're calling them to Congress for tomorrow and the prevalence of oil spills. I mean, we also had that one, that land spill from Chevron in 2019.
Right. Well, I wouldn't go so far as to blame the regulators yet on that because we're still doing the investigation and the agencies have been cooperating. So I don't want to make a statement on that until we have all of the facts. But I will say this, that the disinformation has contributed to inaction in Congress, to weakened regulations, to a lack of funding for enforcement. And that has created an environment, not just one where we haven't invested sufficiently in renewables and electric vehicles. It's created an environment where we've been too lax in regulations. And that was the goal of these companies. What's sad is they succeeded. You know, for 30 years, they've succeeded. Now they're a little more clever. They're saying they're for Paris. They're saying they're for a carbon tax. But then their actions aren't consistent with what Paris says. I mean, Paris says you have to reduce oil consumption in this country in terms of new oil development. We have to reduce that 3 to 4% every year, according to the UN report, to comply with Paris. And Exxon actually is increasing oil production. So they put out the ad saying we're for the Paris Agreement, but then they're increasing production for new oil. And those are the types of contradictions that I think they're going to have to answer for tomorrow. And I don't even mind saying this publicly, even if they're listening, because the contradictions are so blatant. They should, I'm sure their lawyers have told them all about this, but they've never had to answer. And I'm just genuinely curious what they're going to say.
Well, Congressman Khanna, I know you need to leave us to go and take a scheduled vote, but really appreciate hearing from you this morning.
Thank you for covering this.
Ro Khanna, U.S. Congressmember for California's 17th Congressional District, Silicon Valley, mainly chairman of the House Subcommittee on the Environment, a member of the House Oversight, House Agriculture, and House Armed Services Committees. We're talking about tomorrow's House Committee hearing on climate disinformation. And with us still is Amy Westervelt, climate change journalist, whose latest project is Rigged, an online archive and podcast about disinformation, also founder and executive editor of Drilled News, a climate accountability news source. I'd also like to bring into the conversation Connor Sheets, an investigative and enterprise reporter for the Los Angeles Times. Connor Sheets, thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And let me also remind listeners, you can share your thoughts on the hearings and even on the recent Southern California oil spill, which we'll be covering with Connor in just a moment, by calling 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. You can get in touch on Twitter or Facebook at KQED Forum. You can email your comments to forum@kqed.org. Before I go into the oil spill, Amy Westervelt, I did want to just get your reaction to what you heard Representative Khanna say. Clearly, he's focusing on the ways that the oil industry has messaged and framed climate change and the environmental impacts of fossil fuels. And I'm curious how you would answer the question that I put to him about the connection between big oil's disinformation and the prevalence of oil spills. Do you think he captured that? And what other impacts do you think it may have had just in our general understanding of the oil and gas industry?
Yeah. I'm sorry. I had a book fall here.
No worries.
He's dead right. That what they have done over the years, and really this goes way back to long before we started hearing about climate change, the fossil fuel industry has invested more than really any other industry in PR and lobbying over the course of, you know, the last century. So, and their entire focus in doing that was to stop regulation. And as a result, they are one of the least regulated industries, although one of the more damaging ones. So I think it's, you know, it's climate disinformation now, but it's been fossil fuel propaganda for a very long time. And that has really kind of created this framework where any environmental issue that they cause is automatically looked at as, you know, well, how do we balance this with the economic benefits of oil? Or, you know, we don't want to financially damage the oil industry. And, you know, they've been very successful at kind of creating that narrow frame for any environmental problem that they cause, whether it's oil spills or climate change.
Well, let's get an update on that oil spill in Huntington Beach, off the coast of Huntington Beach. Connor Sheets, it's been nearly a month since the spill. We know the beaches have reopened and cleanup and testing of the water and wildlife continue, and that there was better news that the amount of crude ended up being closer to 25,000 gallons compared to the 140,000 or so initially estimated by the Coast Guard. Have investigators shared anything more about what caused it?
So there's been, bits and pieces of information coming out. We continue to hear about this anchor dragging. There's been investigations of different ships that have been in the area during key times that might have caused a dragging of the pipeline. And then reporters and I think some other observers continue to get more information in the form of documents or, from permitting and things like that over the years that kind of reveal some additional information. But at the end of the day, we really don't have a great update on, there's not a huge update on what's going on with it. We're all still waiting for these various investigations to move forward.
You've been looking at the liability question in your reporting, who's responsible for the spill and who may ultimately pay. And accountability is certainly the theme of the hour. What have you learned about holding companies responsible and what often results from that?
Yeah. So, if you look back throughout recent history, there's obviously been a series of oil spills and related incidents in California and beyond. And, often it seems that, when you look at a Deepwater Horizon spill or something like that, a massive spill that, BP or a larger company is responsible for, they might often have the funds and or insurance coverage or that type of thing to cover the losses and the cleanup and all that, or at least a major portion of it. But now we're looking at, as the larger companies like an Exxon or a BP are divesting from some of their aging infrastructure, such as the Beta offshore units that were owned by the company Amplify Energy, that the pipeline broke on it's the pipeline that connects from that Beta unit out to the port of Long Beach. As these smaller companies with less resources and less experiences, they buy up this infrastructure, we're seeing a lowered amount of accountability, because basically, how do you get money from a company that doesn't have that money? So really what's happening is we have in many instances, these companies will declare bankruptcy or spin off a smaller shell company, and the government's left holding the bag on the cleanup.
And by government, you also mean by extension taxpayers.
Sure, exactly.
And do we have any indication that Amplify Energy will file for bankruptcy?
Yeah, so they've said to us, to LA Times, that they do not plan to file bankruptcy. And they've said, looking at how much money they have on hand, they only have about $200 million on hand they have $200 million in debt. They only had about $20 million on hand as of, I think, their second quarter earnings call. So the amount of money they have, if they're asked to pay some of these huge fines, we don't know too much about their insurance, but experts we've talked to don't know, don't feel that it's likely they have enough insurance to cover it. So, what are their options in that situation? And at the same time, if you look back at the playbook of any other company that's had this happen in recent years, it's very common that they go to either spinning off a company or bankruptcy or some other maneuver to try to avoid financial responsibility.
What does this avoidance, do you think, what does this situation lead to? We're talking about it also broadly, right, during this hour. What do you think Californians need to wrestle with regard to that?
Well, I think Californians, but also Americans, I think a lot of this is federal. I mean, these offshore drilling platforms were in federal waters, so a lot of this falls to the federal government. But I mean, we need to look at, what do we require of these companies as far as maintenance? So a lot of this maintenance, some of the rules have been loosened in recent years, and some of the requirements for maintaining pipelines and aging infrastructure fall to the companies to do themselves, so self-regulation. And you have small, under-resourced companies with a financial incentive to keep returning value to shareholders and rebuy shares, as is the case with Amplify Energy. They really focused on that. Does that influence them in a way does that lead to lax enforcement or does that allow this infrastructure to age without being properly maintained? And also just making sure that companies that are engaging in this highly dangerous, this work that's very, potentially very dangerous for the environment, that they have the resources to, if the worst case happens like this, that they're able to, that we require them to have the financial resources to cover the losses and the cleanup, and that they actually do so.
Well, let me go to caller Marjanae in Oakland. Hi, Marjanae.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
I'm a physician, and I just wanted to bring up that climate change is a public health crisis of much greater magnitude than COVID. The lesson we should have learned from COVID pandemic is that there is no really economic prosperity when public health is at risk. So I want to plead to officials to, when they are focusing on policy, to put public health at the center of the policy. Hmm. Fossil fuels not only have misled the public in climate change, they're also now focusing on promoting false climate solutions. Carbon trading is one. I appreciate people brought that up. The other one is carbon capture utilization and sequestration technologies. So capturing some of the CO2 with technology that is very energy intensive and very expensive, and to use public dollars to actually promote these technologies, will only increase pollution in frontline communities. We have to put public health and equity at the center of our policy. This is not a real climate solution. These existing pipelines that we have right now, they leak right now. What will happen to the CO2 pipelines? There's already a report of a CO2 pipeline that has leaked and has put life of hundreds of people at risk. So I'm pleading with policymakers to put the public health at the center of their policy. They're already paying $20 billion a year as subsidies for fossil fuels. Well, subsidizing them more for these false climate solutions is not wise.
Well, Marjanae, thanks for your thoughts. We're hearing from listeners, your reactions to attempts to hold the fossil fuel industry responsible for exacerbating climate change. We're also getting an update on the recent Southern California oil spill. And of course, 866-733-6786 is the number to call to join the conversation with your thoughts. The email address, forum@kqed.org, or post your thoughts on Twitter or Facebook. More Forum after the break and your calls and comments. Stay with us.
Support for Forum is sponsored by Stanford's Master of Liberal Arts program. Have you found yourself reflecting on your life and education? Perhaps you think it's too late or you're too busy to earn a master's degree. Stanford's part-time MLA program is designed for anyone, from recent college grads to retirees, who'd like to pursue an interdisciplinary course of study in the liberal arts. MLA students also enjoy access to the world-class facilities on the Stanford campus. Information session held May 16th. Learn more at mla.stanford.edu.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. We're previewing tomorrow's House committee hearing on climate disinformation and getting an update on the recent Southern California oil spill with Amy Westervelt, climate journalist whose latest project is Rigged, a podcast about disinformation, also founder and executive editor of Drilled News. Connor Sheets is also with us, investigative and enterprise reporter for the Los Angeles Times. Let us know what your thoughts are in terms of big oil's responsibility for worsening climate change, or your thoughts on the comparison between big oil and big tobacco and what effect that could potentially have. If you have any questions about who will be held accountable for the recent Southern California oil spill, you can call us at 866-733-6786. And you can also post your comments online. We're getting a few here. Tom writes, "The only similarity between big tobacco and big oil is that corporate executives lie by design. Fossil fuel will change the Earth's warming to a point of no return, where we have yet to see the global devastation to many species besides ourselves for millennia to come." Alex writes, "This conversation now is wild and led me to watch the video of the Exxon lobbyist stating he is in contact with Manchin every week and how they oppose climate change legislation. Wow," in all caps. Hillary writes, "One thing I do not understand is how publicly elected officials like Senator Manchin can retain their connections to industries like the fossil fuel industry while in public service. It seems so corrupt." Amy Westervelt, I think I'm going to have to ask you to comment on this because we have yet another comment. Anne Marie writing, "When will all the climate change denier politicians who still hold on to their lies be held to account and indeed prosecuted?" Any reactions to this and what role that plays?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is, I don't really understand how someone who is earning $500,000 a year in dividends from a coal business is in charge of deciding whether we act on climate, Joe Manchin. I think that that is a very valid question. And I think it is indicative of a pretty big systemic problem in U.S. politics that I do think will continue to be an obstacle in acting on this problem as well. I don't see a lot of reform coming down the pipeline on that front, to be honest, you know. And I would point out that not one single Republican is willing to back climate policy either, and that the politicization of this issue was done very strategically and very intentionally by a handful of people in the 90s. So it's not like it was inevitable that this was going to become a politicized issue. It has become one, and I think it continues to be a huge problem.
Well, let me go to Andrew in Berkeley. Hi, Andrew.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to mention something that Congressmember Khanna mentioned. He spoke to the importance of Merchants of Doubt, but that book came out 10 years ago. The fossil fuel industry has done significant harm to not only the climate, but also the public understanding and political action to mitigate and adapt to the harm that they helped cause. There really needs to be some sort of punishment for conspiracy to prevent progress in legislation on public threats. So what does holding them accountable for misleading the public actually mean here? Will these hearings have the possibility of opening things up to civil class actions or other items as well?
I think that is a central question. And I know, Amy, that you had also been looking into that and talking with Khanna about what so-called penalties and so on mean.
Yeah. So there's a few things. One is that this investigation is going to be going on for a year or possibly more, and there will be more hearings. They're looking into multiple different, you know, consulting groups and organizations and PR firms that have enabled this along the way as well. So that's something to keep in mind, that it's not, you know, one and done with this hearing. Another is that there are, I don't know, some two dozen cases active in the U.S. courts right now, all of which are accusing the oil companies of fraud, most of them are invoking state consumer protection laws. So there is a very significant chance that what comes out in this hearing and in this investigation would feed into those cases as well. And in most of those cases, the goal is to get the fossil fuel companies to pay into a climate adaptation fund. There's also the polluter pays legislation that has been floated in Congress, which would essentially do the same thing at the federal level, create a fund that the companies pay into that's then used to pay for a clean energy transition and for some climate adaptation measures. One thing that I asked Kana about is something that Stanford researcher Ben Franta mentioned to me, because we were talking about how do we get at this, this system that enables industries like the fossil fuel industry to mislead the public. Mm. And he suggested something that he called information receivership, which was, in his mind was sort of, why should an industry that we know and have documented has consistently lied to the public and behaved in bad faith continue to have the ability to do so? So should they be required to limit how they speak about climate change? This, of course, is like a huge First Amendment minefield, but it's something I asked Ro Khanna about, and he said, I'm not leaving anything off the table. Like if things come out in these hearings that would require looking at something like that, where we actually do treat that industry differently than other industries, maybe that's an option. Yes. So yeah.
But as you allude to, corporate speech, getting into that is fraught.
Yep, sure is. Yeah. If you think climate change is politicized, wait till we get to that one. Yeah.
But I think what you're getting at is what I have read you talk about, which is there is remediation, there is holding companies accountable, and then there's preventing the kind of pass that big oil has gotten. And I guess that is one potential avenue. Let me go to caller Francisco in San Francisco next. Hi, Francisco. Thanks for waiting.
Hi. I remember a few years ago when the Republican, they said that we should give all our resources in public land to oil companies. The price of oil is going to go to 99 cents. I'm paying $7 in San Francisco, and I want to know why our congressmen are not doing anything.
Hmm. Francisco, thanks. Well, let me go to you on this, Connor Sheets. I mean, you have talked about, well, Francisco brings up drilling in public lands. You've talked also about offshore oil production in California as well. And I know that you're focused on accountability and oversight. I mean, What can you tell us about what role that plays in terms of keeping tabs on the industry and the prices that Francisco is suffering from?
Yeah, I mean, I think the issue of the price of gas at the pump and the issue of what we're talking about with accountability, I mean, they're obviously related at some level, but I think, we're looking at individual companies operating in California or small companies like what we've seen with the recent pipeline spill. I mean, I don't know how exactly that would play into that, but I think that we do have to look at solutions that, the problem with some of these bigger, with some of these, I think as we look at some of this, the prices going up and that type of thing, I mean, it's important to look at all the different things we have on the table to make sure we're keeping these companies accountable. And, like I was talking about earlier, there's a culture in these large corporations and some of the smaller ones of, returning value to shareholders, dividends, buying back shares, expanding. And then at the same time at the pump, we're seeing, these exorbitant prices. And should there be some kind of regulation of that type of thing? And, going back to Amplify Energy, the owner of this pipeline, the first, they, they have for years, in 2017, they went bankrupt because they had $2 billion with a B of debt. And they went bankrupt and came back out with a lot less debt. And instead of, saving money in cash reserves and making sure that they were doing everything they could to, keep prices low for consumers or ensure that disasters don't happen. They consistently returned dividends to shareholders, bought back large amounts of shares. And, you know, the bottom line of the company is openly in their shareholder meetings, they say, you know, this is what we're focused on, returning value. And I think, you know, is there a way to rein some of that in as we're seeing, you know, these expensive gas prices or as we're seeing these disasters? That's going to be a question for Congress to look at.
You talk about the culture in companies. What is the culture among federal regulators? You've talked about how they failed to keep tabs on, say, offshore oil drilling, and you know, they've given permits for public lands.
Yeah, no, I can't necessarily speak to the culture of these agencies, but I do. You do see, you know, there's attempts to, you know, whenever there's a big spill, let's say the Exxon Valdez or whatnot, you know, you see these attempts to rein in some of the worst practices of these industries. But then, you know, there's a loosening that happens eventually. And, you know, over the last few years under the, you know, under the Trump administration, there were some things proposed that didn't happen and some things that were loosened a little bit. And, you know, the culture right now is allow these companies, you know, you'll see the regulators in some of these records that we've looked at saying, you know, we would love to do this this or that regulation, but it's going to really impact the bottom line of these oil companies. And, you know, I mean, that's probably the reality is if you regulate a company in certain ways, it's going to cost them more money. But that's, you know, then when they're either that could help avoid some of these environmental catastrophes, it could help or it could, you know, ensure that when they do happen that the taxpayers aren't left with the bill.
We're talking with Connor Sheets about the Huntington Beach oil spill and also with Amy Westervelt about tomorrow's about tomorrow's House Committee hearing on climate disinformation. We're previewing that right now. You're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Let me go to David in Oakland now. Hi, David.
Hi. Thanks for this extended coverage of this topic. I was curious if the speakers could address the misinformation that's coming out of some of the constituents within Silicon Valley, particularly Apple and Google, when it comes to the Build Back Better bill and the Business Roundtable's opposition to actually giving up the Trump tax cuts, that is really, you know, threatening the success of the bill that Biden is proposing. And it seems that so much of what's happening in terms of the communications coming from these companies are still focused on individual behavior change, still kind of focused on CO2 reduction, but there's all of this backlog material that's building up in terms of politics that's actually stopping the agenda for the one chance we have at a climate bill.
David, thanks. Let me go to you, Amy Westervelt, on that.
Yeah, that's a great question. I actually think it's a little bit odd that we are seeing a climate disinformation investigation at the same time that we are seeing Congress investigate disinformation around, you know, January 6th and the election with Facebook and Twitter and all the tech companies. But we're not connecting the dots on those two things because actually the tech companies have definitely been involved in peddling and supporting climate disinformation too. And I think that, you can't separate the content from the distribution mechanism, right? And the tech companies in particular are quite bad about saying that they're all for climate action. And then behind the scenes, as David alluded to, supporting groups that are trying to obstruct climate policy. So I do think that it would be good to include those companies. And I actually heard from Kana when I interviewed him that they are planning to bring some of his own constituents to Congress to talk about climate disinformation too. He mentioned bringing in the social media company execs. I'm not sure about Apple and Google, but they would be good additions. Mm.
Well, Brian writes, it's a little silly to think that the media would produce information about the hazards of a climate crisis when majority ownership in media giants overlaps with oil shareholders. No. Amy, I know you've talked about this, about how far these companies have gone to manage how the public views the industry and not just, you know, from their own advertising, right?
That's right. Yes, they have had extensive campaigns and strategies to shape not just, you know, who gets quoted in what media stories and what gets covered, but really to shape how the media functions. I mean, it was an oil company, Mobil, that created the advertorial back in the 70s. And they are still, you know, producing those today with the New York Times and the Washington Post. Their internal brand studios at those outlets are actually hired by oil companies to produce massive campaigns for them. So this intertwining of oil and media, it goes quite deep, and it goes back a long way. And I do think that actually the media needs to include itself in accountability. But I don't think that means that we shouldn't be talking about it on the media, you know?
Let me go to caller Ken in Oakland. Hi, Ken. Let me grab the call, Ken. Sorry, could you start over?
Yeah, thank you very much for this subject. Number of the callers are calling about looking to legislation and to Congress for solutions. And my question is, how can we expect that from Congress when someone like Joe Manchin is blocking so much of Biden's effort to fund the fight against climate change? But Manchin is reportedly making money from stock he owns in Exxon. I think it's in a blind trust, but nevertheless, he apparently is very supportive of the oil industry. And apparently his family owns a coal company that he, again, you know, I think it's in a blind trust or something, but his family is invested in coal. And how can we expect Congress to do anything when one man, you know, can blockade so much of the effort that Biden and the administration are making to fund a way to fight climate change? I'd really like some answers from the panel.
Well, we touched on this a bit earlier, but quickly, Amy Westervelt, when we were talking about politicians, but do you have any additional thoughts for Ken on that?
Yeah, I would just say that, you know, the industry's investment in climate disinformation is not just media and advertising. It's a lot on lobbying too. And I mean, they spend money to get industry-friendly politicians elected for this exact reason. And I do think that it's a huge, huge problem in the political system that needs to be addressed.
Well, let me go see if I can squeeze Penny from Santa Rosa in. Hi, Penny, quickly join us.
Hi, thanks so much. I really appreciate the work that the committee's doing on misinformation. I personally lost my home in the Glass Fire last year, so I've got like this visceral experience about climate change. And these guys, of course, are bad actors, but they're acting, you know, with their own logic about making as much money as possible. And since we have less than a decade to turn this around, I'm wondering what kind of creative strategies can be put into place to get them to change their actions and have the most leverage possible. They're such big actors in the, you know, of course, in the carbon emitting world. What can we do using their motivation of greed to have them do the right thing? So I'm wondering about that.
Okay. Well, thanks, Penny. Sorry about your home. Connor, one quick thing, and then maybe Amy, one quick thing. We just have 30 seconds.
I mean, I think the most important thing is these companies care the most about their bottom line. So finding ways to hit them in the bank account is probably the best way. I mean, what that exactly means, I'm not an expert on, but I think it has to involve some kind of monetary or even criminal penalties of some kind.
Amy?
Yeah, I would agree. The thing they've fought the hardest against for a century is any kind of stick. And I think that's what we need. We need some kind of financial penalty or requirement for them to pay into a fund that lets people other than oil executives decide how we're going to fix this.
Well, we'll see what happens tomorrow and the ripple effect of that. Thanks, Blanca Torres, our producer, for producing this. Thanks to our listeners for listening. This is Forum. I'm Mina Kim.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.
Do you love your local bookstore? Well, I have the perfect event for you. This Saturday, April 27th, is Independent Bookstore Day. It's a day to celebrate your favorite local bookstore. I'm Olivia Allen Price, host of the Bay Curious podcast here at KQED, and I'm popping in to let you know that we will be hosting an event at Green Apple Books in San Francisco for the occasion. come out for an author Q&A about the Bay Curious book. We'll be playing some Bay Area-themed trivia. There will be prizes and so much more. And the best part, tickets are donation-based, and all proceeds go to the Prisoners Literature Project. Learn more at kqed.org/live. I hope to see you there.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply, not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.